The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, academics are calling for the sugar tax to be increased, calling it invisible due to inflation. Would you support an increase in this tax, which was introduced, we remember, back in 2018? It was considered effective at the time. But right now, the sugar tax, because of inflation, sugar-free drinks and sugary drinks are pretty much exactly the same price. Well, for more on this, I'm joined by Frank Houghton, who's Principal Investigator at the Healer Research Group in the Technological University of the Shannon, and Louise Bayliss, who's Head of Social Justice and Policy at the St. Vincent de Paul. And you're both welcome to the programme. So, Frank, you say that the sugar tax on sweet drinks, introduced, as I said, almost 8 years ago, has become invisible. Why?
I think there's a number of factors there. Firstly, I think it's important to remember that the sugar tax that was initially proposed was actually going to be quite a substantial tax. But in the final analysis, what they introduced was really quite a modest sugar tax. For a lot of drinks, it was just 5 cents a can. And on sort of high sugar drinks like Coca-Cola, it was 8 cents a can. The trouble is, not only were the amounts really quite modest, but it was a fixed rate that was introduced rather than any form of percentage or index-linked amount. So, you know, we've now had the guts of 8 years of inflation, which have actually cut away the impact of that. And I think it's also faded in people's memories that we have a sugar tax and it doesn't have any kind of logo or warning on the drinks. And finally, to make it worse, the lots of the retailers are actually charging exactly the same price for the full sugar and diet drinks, which was never envisaged.
So do you say that in 2018, when it was introduced, that it was having an impact, that you could see the price increase and that people were making choices based on the addition of the tax?
I was involved in the Department of Health's review of this a couple of years ago, and it's really notable that in 2019 there was a real step change in the amount of sugar that was being consumed via soft drinks, be it through retail or be it through sort of, you know, pubs and that. It was between a 20 and 30% decrease in sugar consumption via those two venues. So it really was notable at that point in time. Definitely.
But we forgot about it pretty quickly. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we forgot about it, but also the manufacturers reformulated, which was great to see. If you go back to 2018, I think I'm right in saying that Pepsi, Sprite, 7-Up, Club Orange, Fanta, a lot of these drinks were in what you might call the lower sugar band of the sugar tax. So somewhere between 5 grams of sugar and 8 grams of sugar per 100 mils. And it's great to see. It wasn't just people making a conscious choice to pick the healthier brand. Lots of the major manufacturers reformulated. And I suppose what we would also be arguing is, you know, there has been a clear success. Coca-Cola is something of an outlier. They still have their, I think it's 10.6 grams of sugar per 100 mils. But most of the others have reformulated. So we would be arguing, great, we can see the success of this, if only through manufacturer reformulation. Let's build on that. Let's reduce the threshold that this tax kicks in. And I think we can be fairly certain, based on past experience, what will happen is the likes of Pepsi, Sprite, 7-Up, etc., will reformulate again to avoid the tax.
Mm-hmm. So it's about 5 cent, is it, or up to 8 cent on a can, on a regular sized can?
On a regular 330ml can, it's either 5 cents or if it's Coca-Cola, it would be 8 cents.
Because of the higher sugar content.
Because of the higher sugar content. And I think it's important that people remember what we mean by that higher sugar content. In a standard 330ml, which admittedly is quite small, I don't know about you, but when I go into local corner shops and supermarkets now, it's actually quite hard to find a 330ml can. It's increasingly replaced by the 500ml bottle or 500ml can. But the average, the old-fashioned 330ml can for Coke, that's about 8 spoons of sugar. Mm-hmm. It's quite dramatic. You know, if you imagine if you sat there at your morning tea break with your friends and you spooned in 8 spoons of sugar, people will be looking at you fairly strange.
So the impact of the tax wasn't really, from listening to you, on our habits as consumers. We weren't seeking out the sugar-free options. It was more the reformulation by the manufacturers, Frank.
It's hard to know. Unfortunately, there wasn't good baseline data taken in advance of the introduction of this initiative. So I think it's probably a combination of the two. But where we do have, I suppose, fairly solid information is we can see that, you know, four of the five top leading soft drinks did reformulate to below the level of the tax kicking in.
So what are you saying it should increase by or to now?
Well, the World Health Organization is suggesting that it should actually be 20%, which would be quite significant. I would suggest that as an in-between step, perhaps it becomes 10% of the cost. That was what was initially touted by government in some of the conversations in advance of it coming in. What actually came in was you know, significantly less.
What would that add to a can of soft drink, a 330ml? Are they around the 150 mark now, maybe a bit more, 175? So you'd be looking at an extra 17 cent?
Well, I think it would be nearer to 37 cents. Yeah, 37 and a half, something like that.
At 10%?
Oh, sorry, I was thinking of the WHO level.
Oh, yeah. No, so we're right. No. We're agreed. It'd be around 17 cent at the 10% that you say would be the good starting point. Now, I have listeners making the point, and Louise, I'll come to you on this in a second, that sugar-free drinks have so many more ingredients than the ones that have sugar in them. And actually, you'd ask yourself, am I doing more harm drinking this sugar-free version than the one that has the teaspoons of sugar in it, as you've described?
Yeah, and I understand those concerns. I suppose what I'm faced with, or my thoughts lean strongly towards perhaps the lesser of two evils. We have a situation where among adults, 60% of the population in Ireland are overweight or obese. And perhaps more alarmingly, 20% of children are overweight or obese. And we know the health impacts of these in terms of diabetes, cancer, heart disease. So I suppose at one level, I'm much more inclined to try and deal with the dangers that I'm fairly certain of, as opposed to possible other concerns, if that makes sense.
Okay, well, I want to bring Louise in. Frank, stay with us. Louise Bayliss, Head of Social Justice at the St. Vincent de Paul. Louise, how do you feel about an increase in this sugar tax on drinks?
From the start, I would say, you know, obviously anything that improves the health of the community is good. And that's, you know, that's a positive outlook. I like the idea of the manufacturer being forced to change the formula. That, to me, works really well. We know that a sugar tax is a regressive tax because those on lower income will pay more proportionately of their income for something like that. And I think at the moment there are families and households who are really, really struggling. If we look at the health behaviour of school children report, the most recent one came out in 2022, that report showed that 18% of children have gone to school or gone to bed hungry because there is not enough food in their presses. I think when you look at that, when you look that 48% of children in one-parent families are experiencing enforced deprivation, this is not the time to be looking to add extra income onto those households. What we should be doing is, and I think he outlined it really well, is making sure that the manufacturers change how they produce it and tax or penalise manufacturers who don't reduce it, rather than putting another regressive tax on the individual payer.
Okay, what do you make of that, Frank, that this really is not the time to be adding an additional tax, in particular for families that are already experiencing poverty and deprivation?
I completely understand where she's coming from. I mean, it makes sense at one level, but my response would be, I suppose, threefold. Firstly, I'd say that when it comes to these kind of drinks, from a nutritional perspective, we really are talking empty calories, and those are never ideal. I would also say that in the paper that we just had published on this, we were quite clear. What we would like to see is some of the money, it's just over 30 million a year. We would like to see some of that money taken, ring-fenced, you know, protected for treatment of obesity and prevention and treatment services. But we would also really like to see some of that money ring-fenced for the development of allotments, for the development of community orchards, community gardens. We're not looking to sort of make nutritious food less accessible for people of any income. We would like to see some of these initiatives which would help provide food for everyone. I would also say I completely understand the regressive by nature argument, but it's also important to remember that there is a distinct socioeconomic gradient with obesity. We live in such a calorifically rich environment that it's often people who are on lower incomes who are more likely to be obese. It's not an absolute thing, but if you look by social class, we do tend to find that there's a higher incidence of obesity and overweight in poor people.
So what you're saying then is, Frank and Louise, if you could come in on this, this tax would actually benefit the very people who you have described as being in need, Louise. That's where this money will go.
I don't see that as the purpose of that. I think ensuring that manufacturers change the process, encouraging them to reduce their corporate tax intake if they produce healthier drinks is the way to go. I think, you know, it's coming from a place of privilege to say, well, it's for their own good that we're going to introduce that tax, when it really is putting a burden on households, when they really are struggling. As I said, almost one in five children have gone to school or gone to bed hungry. That's the problem that I think we should be concentrating on before we look at a place of privilege and say we'll change the behaviour of poor people. I don't like that analogy. I don't like that statement. I prefer to think we make society a fairer society before we start doing something
okay.
like that.
Frank, do you want to address that before we finish?
No, that was certainly not how this was meant. And I suppose would reiterate the argument about we do feel some of this money should be ring-fenced and spent on community gardens, community orchards. I think there's huge potential in that in terms of building community resilience and community cohesion.
Okay, lots of texts coming in. And this one, which says all the sugar tax has done is made drinks less enjoyable and for them to have more additives. Everyone already knows that these drinks are not good for them. And this one says it's the same with non-alcoholic beer. It's loaded with sugar and the outlets charge the same price for them. I know lots of people have issues with that, with a non-alcoholic version costing exactly the same as the one that has alcohol in it. Dr. Frank Houghton there and Louise Bayliss, thank you both for joining us.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.